everybody, and welcome to another Spiritual Hollywood Hour. We would like to thank Don Newsom and BBS Radio for being a wonderful platform for Spiritual Hollywood. And I'm Kate Romero, your guest. I'm not your guest. I'm your host. And the guest tonight is Michael Murdad, who is a wonderful author of a book called Sacred Sexuality, A Manual for Living. And if you'd like to pull up that website right now while you're listening, go to www.sacredsexuality.us. That's sacredsexuality.us. And another website, if you want to switch back and forth and multitask, would be www.grailproductions.com. That's GRAILPRODUCTIONS.com. And both of those resources will give you a very good idea about who I'm about to bring on and interview for the next hour, which will be very insightful. I'll just read a little bit from Michael's bio. Dr. Michael Murdad, a master teacher author, has an extensive background in psychology, parapsychology, and metaphysics. He is the author of The Seven Initiations of the Spiritual Path and Sacred Sexuality, A Manual for Living Bliss. Michael began his studies in sacred sexuality in the late 70s and began teaching in the early 80s, which makes him one of the few teachers in the Western world with over 25 years of practice. He is also a healer and a counselor to individuals and couples and has conducted thousands of classes, lectures, and workshops on spirituality, relationships, and healing. His knowledge and wisdom, combined with his personal warmth, humor, and integrity, has earned him the highest regards from students, teachers, and authors around the world. For more information on Dr. Murdad, please visit the websites that I just gave you. And I know that many of you have heard of Doreen Virtue, who also sings Michael's praises, as well as many, many others. Alan Cohen, author of The Dragon Doesn't Live Here Anymore. Martha S. Whipple, PhD, psychologist and sex therapist. Diana Richardson, The Heart of Tantric Sex. David A. Ramsdale, Sexual Energy and Ecstasy. And Master Mantak Chia, Taoist Secrets of Love. So he's got some really nice credentials, and he's a really wonderful fellow. I've had conversations with him before, and just you're going to really enjoy this next hour on Spiritual Hollywood with Michael. And with no further ado, I bring on Michael Murdad. Hello, Michael.
Hello, how are you?
I'm wonderful.
Good.
Divine. And I want to thank you for joining us this evening. And just ask you right off the top, when I asked you to do this interview for Spiritual Hollywood, what your thoughts were on the topic?
Well, it's a topic that, you know, is so highly charged for so many people, but it's no surprise sex sells, you know, and it's on people's minds. And behind that, of course, relationships. So it's just like what a wonderful opportunity to enlighten folks and to share ideas that bring higher or deeper concepts to the realm of sexuality and or relationships.
Absolutely. And pertaining to Hollywood in general, what would you say, how would you say we can heal what's going on in Hollywood with regard to, you know, I don't want to jump right into a very potent topic right off the top of the show. I'd rather build up to that, as it were.
Yeah.
but like most things, there's a metaphor there.
Yeah.
I'm blushing. Anyway, back to the drawing board. I can't believe this. I'm actually really blushing. With regard to sexuality in cinema and television and late-night episodics, soap operas, and even some commercials, I mean, in other parts of the world, you know, they're quite open sexually with their depictions of nude bodies and sexuality in general. What would you say is your favorite part of the world whose advertising utilizes a healthy perspective on sexuality?
Well, you know, when you use the word healthy perspective, that changes the whole question, doesn't it?
Yes.
Healthy perspective, very, very few, a very small percentage, and very few companies or ad campaigns would illustrate or utilize healthy, because you know, in mass, the population, you know, is under that belief system, a false, erroneous belief system, that within them they are broken beings, that there's something missing in their lives or in their souls. And so media and or the world at large thrives on that, and it sells itself to them on that. Something's missing from your life, and we can sell it to you. You know, how much can you sell people on? You're complete, you don't need us, so you won't need to buy our product. You know, that just wouldn't go very well. So, you know, so mostly it's thriving on the something's wrong with your life, and we're going to thrive on that. You know, and so it's an unhealthy campaign to appeal to. And this is TV, this is movies, this is ads, this is magazines. You know, I say to folks, even in the checkout stands, there's always some magazine that's telling you what you don't have and, you know, how you need to learn this, or in relation to relationships and sexuality, there's always something to say, 10 things, you know, your partner should be doing for you.
Right.
You know, there's always these ads, and everything uses that sexy quality. You
mm-hmm.
know, even if you write a book, book illustrators, book designers, and publishers, they still say they look for a sexy cover. It doesn't mean sexual,
mm-hmm.
but a sexy cover, something that, you know, reaches into people and evokes, you know, some sort of feeling that would encourage them to want that product. And so it's all based on lack, and you know, and that's what stirs people. So that's a huge percentage that goes off the unhealthy aspect of human consciousness, and a smaller that goes on healthy. But something is shifting right now, and you mentioned, and we won't go into it deep yet, but you mentioned cinema and television.
Mm-hmm.
Although it's mostly from an unhealthy perspective, people are realizing that's just not working. There's, you know, they're wanting something more real. They're wanting something deeper, and it's not always about the hyperstimulation that they've been hearing about, and it's not about what they're missing and what they're lacking. They're looking for an authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the ancients understood this, the ancients that practiced sacred sexuality and modern sacred sexuality. These practitioners understood it as well. But the idea is slowing down, you know, whether it's meditation, whether it's sexuality, whether it's your lifestyle in general, slow down and experience life to its fullest capacity.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're needing to go for in that direction. And it's happening. It's kind of cool to see it happening. But people are getting to that place where if you go into a bookstore now, just a mainstream bookstore, most of the books on sexuality are books that are going to be there for a few years and then dumped, because even that subject's being sold as a quick, you know, go on to the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a book on, you know, oils for sex. Here's massage for sex. And here's how to improve sex. And they just pump them out there like they're just meaningless. And then they dump that title off the market until something better comes along that'll make them money. And, you know, to have a few books now that are a little more about deepening relationship and consciousness and how to make it more spiritual sexuality, that's the direction we need to be going. And it's not going to happen if the powers that be don't see that that's what the public wants. So one of the things we have to all do is let it be known that that's desired, that we really want to deepen consciousness, and in the context of sexuality especially.
I couldn't agree more. I know for myself that if I don't have a heart connection or some sort of emotional bond with someone, I don't even think along the lines of taking it further. I mean, unless there's a heart connection, I don't even want to participate.
Right.
I don't even want to go there. I mean, if it's not a spiritual enhancement, which I believe sexuality is for myself, and I'm only speaking for myself, and there are others that I know feel this way, that it's a spiritual bond, and I know that a lot of things in today's advertising, cinema, television exploit sexuality and the sacredness of it, and I call that sexploitation. And it's just, it's, you know, and I don't want to get too quickly into that other topic we will end up talking about, but there is a lot of misguided intentions towards actual healing by using certain things that are considered unhealthy, but it's wounded people attempting to heal themselves through this process that don't even know that they don't know they're trying to heal themselves through unhealthy practices, if that makes any sense at all.
Yeah, you're correct, and couldn't agree with you more. And one of the problems we have with producing a deeper perspective of sacred sexuality is, first of all, the topic is so highly charged. I mean, it's been abused and misused throughout history.
Yes.
But even now, what we're up against, you know, I teach on many topics. Sexuality is just one topic. The bottom line is I'm about spirituality, love, healing, and so on, and my background's diverse. Sexuality is one of my topics, and that's because it's not treated with the healing and the perspective of spiritual depth that it could be. So it's one of the topics, and I've been teaching it a long time. But ironically, even as I write the book and it comes out onto the market, a lot of the places that I once taught, spiritual centers or bookstores, metaphysical bookstores, or even some of the more New Thought churches, turned their back and specifically said they would not be able to have me back because I wrote a book on sexuality.
Wow.
I really wasn't trying to be too naive in writing the book. I was certainly aware that some people might be a little bit charged by it, but I didn't expect such a blatant, you know, old-fashioned kind of, you know, Victorian response. And so,
surprised. I mean, it even says sacred sexuality.
Oh, absolutely.
That cleans it up.
Just the title itself, to say sacred, does mean spiritual or blessed,
purified,
or conscientious, or whatever, and
mm-hmm.
But no, it's instead it was attacked. But one of the things we're challenged with is, you know, from both sides. I understand this from both sides, because as I stand in the center, or as you and I, or anybody on the planet that wants to stand in a sacred sexual experience, or to study it, or to discover it,
mm-hmm.
from one side you have sexuality that's completely old, you know, the Victorian, the judgment, all the stuff projected onto sexuality. And on the other extreme, you have people overusing it. And I'm not even talking about, like, for pornography and such. I'm talking about people that just simply make it any excuse to have sex, and they call it sacred.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm on tour right now. I'm in, you know, Los Angeles and Orange County and so forth this week.
Uh-huh.
You know, I tour about 3 weeks a month. I go all over the place. And just a week ago, I'm in another town. And in that town, it was incredible. First of all, I was doing book signings on sacred sexuality and doing some lectures on it. But it was incredible the proportion of people that came to me for private consultations, because I do that as well, and helping to heal and counsel people's lives and give guidance. But the number of people that were there, and I mean huge proportion, that were there out of wanting to learn and heal more about sacred sexuality, but that many of their friends in their community are involved in the swingers scene and so on. And that's cool. That whatever people do, that's beautiful. Whatever flips your switch, I have no judgment about it. But what I'm saying is that you have these extremes, and a lot of these groups, a lot of these people would come to my lectures and say, you know, because they think, okay, what's on sacred sexuality? A lot of these folks would attend and say, you know, there's some problems. Listen, I went to a lecture a couple of weeks ago. I went to a group that claimed to be sacred sexuality, and it basically was just an orgy.
Oh.
And again, that's great for whoever wants to do whatever. That's your life. That's fine. But what I'm mm-hmm. saying is everybody can use any label they want.
Right.
And when we say sacred sexuality, you've got people completely against it, and people that are claiming to be doing it and using it in an extreme that has nothing to do with sacredness, has
right.
nothing to do with spiritual intent nor personal integrity.
Right.
And so the topic is so highly charged because, you know, it could go in any direction. And then, of course, there is the, you know, the abuse that, you know, that goes with the porn scene, and, you know,
yeah.
what are the perspectives of that? What is one's perception of that? And what people ask me all the time, what do you think of, you know, that kind of scene? And, you know, looking for judgments on my part. And I have none, because I work with, and for over the years, with so many people and so many levels of abuse and trauma, as well as, you know, giving life guidance, but also lots of deep, deep sessions on healing. And
spirit doesn't have judgment, and that's what's different about you.
Well, you know, you don't need to be doing it. I mean, you know, everybody's got judgment. There's enough of that on the planet. It's like it's old. Why do it? Why be part of something that's redundant?
It's pollution.
Right?
It's pollution, not solution.
You know? Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So, but in working with folks like this, you find that, and I've worked with all, you know, from porn stars to just average folks to ministers and their families, and all kinds of folks and celebs and, you know, all kinds of folks, and you know, finding out that it's a common understanding that most people, most strippers, most porn stars have sexual abuse. That's huge. But like, if I had to give it a number, I'd say 70%.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge percentage. Not 20%, not 5%. It's like 70%.
Right.
That means there's something wrong with this whole scene.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is, forget film and stripping and prostitution for a moment. Any human being that is being sexual unconsciously, that is to say, when there is some addictive drive within them, or there's an unconsciousness because of former abuses,
mm-hmm.
they're checking out of their body, they're not present with their partner. Bottom line is, the word is safety. If you're not feeling a sense of love and safety in your experience, and I don't care if you have 10 people that are sharing that, I won't judge it.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's love and safety and you can convince me that it's love and safety, I think it's great.
Mm-hmm.
I have no issues with that. But even if it's one person who's self-pleasuring, if they're unconscious and they're in a space of regression and abuse memory and such, or even blocking abuse and find themselves acting it out, it's not healthy.
Mm-hmm.
That's from a spiritual point of view. That's from a psychological point of view. It's not healthy. So for these folks to ever claim, well, my abuses have nothing to do with this, is completely absurd, because it's absolutely playing a part in the choices we make, the addictive behaviors, our ability to be in our body and be present. That's why sacred sexuality has certain components, or what I'll call, if I may, rules,
mm-hmm.
Which for me, I say this all the time. The first one is there needs to be an expression of love. And I want to be clear, hon, I'm not talking about romance.
No, I understand what you mean.
Some people think, when you say love, you mean one-on-one, romantic, forever, the ring, the wedding.
Romance, in my opinion, is just something that's made up, that's pretty much an illusion. I believe that true romance is a heart connection where there's unconditional love and safety, like you said.
Right. So that's the key. See, when we say love, it can be a very vague term. Love in action means there's an element of safety. There's a meaning, we know and trust each other. There's safety. Our spiritual and personal and emotional and physical safety is absolutely right there. We understand each other, and that's a priority. So love is number one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's acted out or displayed as safety in our interaction. Secondly, responsibility, to where you and I both understand what we're doing is a choice that we're making, and we're okay with that. I can expound on that much more, but I won't right now.
Mm-hmm.
The next one is communication. We have to be responsible enough to communicate. We can't just call it responsibility internally. We have to have guidelines and I call it, kind of the rules of engagement. When we're going to be intimate, you can't just call it love. You've got to bring in safety. You've got to bring in responsibility. You've got to bring in healthy communication. Then, with all that in place, I believe you can, what I call, trust and surrender. You
mm-hmm.
can let go. If you and I build that space where we have love in the form of safety, responsibility, and communication, that's
mm-hmm.
it. We can let go. And that's beautiful. I mean, I don't care if it's for one night or for the rest of your life or for 100 lifetimes. The bottom line is you can let go completely, and that's what you want to create in a sacred sexual experience.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, it also opens up to, learning more about your body, and yes, it includes learning new things and positions and playfulness, learning not just to have sex as, intercourse, but to have, understand what it's like to experience foreplay and intercourse and post-play, the follow-up, the integrating, the connecting afterwards, and even understanding the concept of orgasm. There's that, wow, that word, can be so highly charged for folks. But, even sacred sexuality, yeah, it's a part of understanding and expanding the concept of what orgasm is about. And just to keep in the context of your some of your early comments, when it comes to cinema and media, what are they all about? They're, these
instant
movies.
Instant gratification.
These movies that become real, big and talked about. Hey, did you see Sharon Stone expose herself?
Yeah.
Or hey, did you see so-and-so, having sex on the hood of a car? And
mm-hmm.
that's what people are, that's called the heights of sex.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to clarify right now that there's what we call the heights of sex and the depths of sex.
Yeah.
Now, my description in the book is that the heights of sex cause me, it's almost like fire inside. It's a passion. So the heights effects burn as a hot burning fuel, which is a quick burning fuel.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to rip your clothes off and, you know, just go after you.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of kissing on the way in, and I rip your clothes off. And this is what in the movies and the TV shows you see, you know, they punch the button on the elevator and go for it in the elevator.
Mm-hmm.
And people
mm-hmm.
are just like watching this all sweaty going, wow. You know, and they throw all the stuff off the desk at the office and do it right on the desk. And people are going, wow. And there's people that are out there going, oh, if only, or I wish I could have that, or isn't that wonderful, isn't that sexy?
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, that's fine, but it's mostly insane behavior. It's mostly addictive. You're doing the same thing an addict does.
Absolutely.
When they
Thank
have
you.
To have another fix.
Yep.
They sweat, their pulse starts going, and
mm-hmm.
they'll do anything to get that
yep.
needle in their arm.
Yep.
And no offense to it all, because I understand there's an art form to it, and a playfulness to it. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
But where's the love? Where's the safety? Now, and I'm not trying to push, like monogamy or missionary sex or anything like that. I'm saying, I already said earlier, when you have safety, when you have responsibility and communication, you should be able to let go, and that means sky's the limit. Just
whatever you both consent
for it. But having that safe parameter. So the closing of that point was that's the heights of sex, stripping their clothes off. The depths of sex is when you put them on afterwards. You're still there. You don't just kiss them coming into it. You kiss them coming out of it.
Mm-hmm.
You still now you're still willing to talk and communicate and join and experience and you know it, that's what I call post play. But
yeah.
that's the depths of sex and movie and cinema has almost nothing to do with the depths of sex. And
Absolutely.
When they do, it's almost gratuitous. It's got to be
Thank
what
you.
They call a chick flick.
Yeah.
They say the guys kind of laugh at those scenes where. Well, comedians make lots of fun about, yeah, I was with a girl the other night, and can you believe it? She wanted to have conversation afterwards.
Or
it becomes
a
fodder for comedy because
mm-hmm.
it becomes a chick, quote-unquote, concept
mm-hmm.
to want to connect afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
But it isn't a chick concept. The ancients, you'll read in the Kama Sutra and some of the ancient teachings on sacred sexuality, they're saying women are more naturally tantric. Women are more naturally, truly sexual. Men, according to the Taoists, are like fire, and women are like water. So
mm-hmm.
they say a man should get the woman's water boiling, but instead he usually throws the wood in so quickly, he burns himself out. He burns himself out, the fire out, before he can get her water boiling.
Oh, so to speak.
yeah, you know. So
we
need to nurture what I'm calling the depths of sex, which...
Yes.
Which can still take the form of the heights. That is to say, it's a cooler energy. It's a longer term. So you nurture each other longer. You have a deeper depth of a greater sense of the heart connection.
Mm-hmm.
There's more of that eye to eye contact. There's conversation. There's just an overall depth, and it's the depth of sexuality, and that can go into the heights. That is to say, passion and intensity and beauty. It can have all that, but you will not reach the depth through the heights. You will not get it the other way around. You won't reach depth if you go like fire after a person,
yeah.
like an addiction. That will not lead you to the peace or the tranquility or the interconnectedness or the spiritual experience that the ancients
mm-hmm.
so often talked about.
Mm-hmm. And it needs to build. And I'm thinking of you for... I'm thinking of, all the movies out there right now that are in pre-production, and they have these love scenes, let's call them, in them. And I'm thinking how much more improved they would be if you were consulting on those scenes and just those scenes.
Yeah, and it's so simple. I, seriously, I do lectures, and I have sometimes people take hands, like pair up in an audience,
mm-hmm.
and it has nothing to do with sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
But here's a simple example in case there's film, any filmmaker who happens to be taking notes. Here's a simple one that you can just get yourself. When you take two people and you have them hold hands. I'm not saying they only need to hold hands. I'm just saying this is how I illustrate it in
mm-hmm.
a workshop
mm-hmm.
or in a big lecture. You take two people and they're holding hands, and long story short, and I have to keep it brief, mind you, I'm just having them hold hands, and I have them become completely aware, their right hand holding the other person's right hand, mind you, I have them become completely aware of their hand and everything about their hand, like temperature and the curve of each finger, totally aware of your own hand. Then you shift your attention to become aware of the partner's hand, whoever hand you're holding.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just completely aware of it, every aspect of their hand. Then you meld and you start thinking of both hands. And they no separation. The two hands become one. I'm aware of your finger curve this way, my finger curve that way.
Mm-hmm.
Everything starts to melt eventually. It's funny because as you're holding and putting attention there, you cannot define them apart anymore. Eventually, they become sort of one,
mm-hmm.
you know, consistent energy.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'll even stretch it a little further and say, slowly move your hands to explore the other person's hand. Very slowly. The faster you go, it symbolizes, you know, again, almost the speed of getting too fast and carried away sexually, and
mm-hmm.
you lose connection.
Yeah.
So it's all a metaphor. They're moving their hand gently, slowly. They're exploring the hand of their partner, their friend, or whatever, and they're feeling knuckle and soft skin and pads of the flesh and temperatures and all that. And in the end, I have them just gently hold and say thank you with their hands by just holding gently, you know, and
mm-hmm.
giving a little squeeze of gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
But typically, that simple exercise illustrates that it doesn't have to be through genitals. Any part of us, when we put our full attention, because in the end, I'm asking them, now, were you anywhere else? No, they were right there,
mm-hmm.
concentrating on feeling every part of that person's hand.
Present.
So it just, you disappear in that.
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden you realize, my God, and I have couples that are together, and they say, we've never been so present with each other as this simple hand exercise.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm telling them, now, of course, this is a metaphor.
Yeah.
This is how you should be hugging your children before school, meaning complete attention. When they come home and tell you a story that they wrote, whatever, complete attention.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, with lovers and how you cook and whatever you make at work and product you develop, everything should have complete focus and intention.
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes a metaphor for life itself, but yes, it's also a metaphor for sexuality. And if a filmmaker, and I know it's been done, I'm sure, but when a filmmaker can say, you know, putting complete attention, you know, just they need to imagine what is being felt between those two bodies. And if they put their mind into it and say, now, if I were the cells, every cell of that man and every cell of that woman, and I were filled with light, the essence of God, love, how would I feel as I look before me and see all the cells of another being also love God, whatever essence?
Mm-hmm.
I would be completely ecstatic, leaping with joy to want to join with these other cells of godness. You know, it doesn't have to be cosmic. I'm being a little cosmic. It doesn't have to be that cosmic. But the bottom line is, if my body is filled with ecstasy of light, it's completely going to feel ecstasy at wanting to join with your ecstatic light.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's this ecstatic experience as we join.
Mm-hmm.
So every touch should send a ripple through her body. And, of course, then they can scan and film it from the right angles and do whatever to show that her body is in love. I don't mean just in love romantically. I'm saying it's in a state of love.
Mm-hmm.
So they can bring this very sensual, sexy, beautiful, erotic, you know, filmmaking,
mm-hmm.
but have integrity to it. It doesn't
just
have
integrity,
to be
but that,
about speed.
Yeah, and that brings an innocence to it.
Absolutely.
For me personally, the more innocent something is, the more sexy it is.
Absolutely.
For me. Innocent meaning not having any preconceived notions brought to it, not having any instant gratification brought to it, not having any past experience with any other person brought to it. Just bring your heart to it, your soul to it, your spirit to it, and your body to it.
Absolutely.
And for me, that is what, you know, my movie-going dollars would prefer to be spent on, is seeing that kind of cinema. But instant gratification, I mean, there are some things that are done well that I will enjoy watching two people kiss.
Yeah.
But there are some things done in a way where people are just kissing and I can't tolerate looking. I don't want to see it. I don't want to be a voyeur. I don't want to know what they're doing. And then they move on to do more things and it's like, I'm just not comfortable. But when it's done well and it's done with right intention and it's done with innocence and it's done with spirit and heart connection, then you know it. And that's something beautiful to behold. But in cinema and TV, we've so gotten away from the innocence of how we all got here through procreation.
Yeah.
And procreation is to be honored and it's to be revered and it's become somehow, some way over time, just a way to sell products.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and the way we dress, the clothes we wear, everything is all designed around looking sexy.
Right.
Where there's nothing wrong with looking sexy. I enjoy looking sexy, but not for the intent and purpose of instant gratification.
Right.
But to decorate my space, to enjoy my own body, to bring some color to wherever I am and my own uniqueness.
Right.
But it's not about trying to attract somebody for sex. It's about expressing my unique talent, gifts, energy, artistic flair, whatever it is, and expressing my heart through what I wear, expressing my heart through what I say, expressing my heart through what I do. And, you know, making love is you know, as basic as even a phone call.
Right.
You know, it's as basic as just, I don't know, looking at nature and feeling the tears well up in your eyes.
Well, it's clearly a part of, organic life. It's clearly a part of nature itself.
Well, organic and orgasm come from the same place, don't they?
That's right. That's right.
Right.
And, you know, there's a place, mind you, in films when you have shallow sex or you have...
That's if it moves the story forward.
Well, if that's in the context of a shallow scene or a shallow movie or shallow experience that character is having, that's one thing. But where can we have more authenticity, sexual authenticity in sexuality, and can it be done?
Yes.
To you know, each absolutely.
People.
And if... Again, if in a scene or if in movies, somebody's coming from that place of, you know, their lack and their losses inside and their pain, it's going to make sense to have some of that. I mean, even music's the same thing. I mean, there's a lot of music that's, clearly about pain.
Yeah.
When it becomes something that's more, you know, authentic and spiritual, then they tend to call it, a little cheesy, or they call it new age. You know, if an artist tries to get too spiritual, it just gets... kind of poo-poo. I mean, look at Alanis Morissette.
Mm-hmm.
When she sang about pain, it went to number one and sold a zillion copies. When
mm-hmm.
she went and had a personal transformation in India and came back and sang about that, she was completely scoffed at. And a lot of critics just, panned her.
Well, that's because there's a collective consciousness out there that feeds on what's called the pain body. If you've read Eckhart Tolle's The Power of Now, he talks about the pain body. And the pain body, you can tell by certain movies like Chainsaw Massacre and those sort of things, you can tell that those movies are made by pain bodies for pain bodies.
That's right.
And pain bodies go and they feed on that.
Right.
And pain bodies make that for the pain bodies out there. And I recommend everybody, read the chapter in The Power of Now, Eckhart Tolle's book, about pain bodies. You will get so much insight from that you will think twice any time you let your emotions take you over. But there's, it's like the pain body needs to be fed on. That's what's happening with road rage. That's what's happening with rape. It's all about control and dominance. It's about the pain body needing to be fed. And it will do whatever it can do to get somebody to lash out at them so that their pain body can be fed. So a lot of people who are instigating trouble are really looking to feed their pain body.
That's right. And if it's not addressed, however, I mean, if people try to say, well, I don't want to be like that, and I don't want to be part of that scene or coming from my unhealthy emotions or my pain, and they try to suppress it and think that they're going to get away with that, it's not going to work. Inquisitions were all about trying to suppress one's pain, pretend that your desire wasn't there. It created inquisitions, which took the lives of millions of women.
Mm-hmm.
Almost all deaths in the Inquisition were related to female deaths, and they were almost always sexual tortures. That's a Freudian heyday. I mean, Freud being at that time analyzing these people, these inquisitors and these church representatives, would have had a heyday with them. Because
all repressed.
It was all about their sexual repression.
Yeah.
Now, I admire that if any single one of them had an absolute, true, clear intent to say, I'm trying to find God, and I'm frustrated. I don't understand how. So I'm trying to put away my needs of the flesh, whether it's food or money or sex. I understand if that was their true intention, bless them, and I hope they find it some lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
But when you think that that's what you're doing, and you suppress, and then it dumps out on another human being, it's not appropriate. It's not legal in most regions.
Very harmful.
They got away with it at that time. And it just became a rampant, experience. And it still scars the souls of people today.
Right.
Often overlooked, but it still scars the souls today. So here at this time, we have to understand to say that, no, we just only want to allow sex as long as it's, quote, spiritual or nicey-nice and new age. We both wear our crystals when we make love or whatever. that's not what we're talking about.
No, it's not. It's just cleaning it up.
That's right. Well, it's bringing in...
Shifting consciousness.
It's bringing in truth. It's bringing in more expanded experience, more presence.
Yes.
So these folks, if you say no, like the folks that have decided on my part when I write the book, no, we can't. We see that this book is really a little too much about sex and sexuality. It's a little too out there for us. What they're doing is they're feeding that old inquisition kind of energy again.
Mm-hmm.
But what'll happen is, even if you're trying to do what you feel is right and you say to your partner, this isn't right, I don't want this, so just keep that out of our life, and they say, okay. And in a sense, they start sneaking off and feeding the world of pornography off their credit card every month, or sneaking off to strippers or whatever. How much good have you brought to the world? I don't think much.
No.
You might have seemingly saved your little bubble that you say, I only want safe, healthy sex in my life.
Uh-huh.
When we're not addressing what's really going on, it's going to expand. It's going to get worse.
Mm-hmm.
So your partner's now going elsewhere or fantasizing.
Mm-hmm.
This is not going to get healed without communication.
Absolutely.
Without actual healing. And it's, if you work with your partner and you say, look, let's talk about what this is, and I don't care what your partner's asking you to do, doesn't matter. I have no judgment on what I'm saying is, are you aware of what's motivating what they're doing?
Mm-hmm.
What they're wanting to do. If you can get clear about the motivations, do some self-inventory, some introspection around this, and then some communication, at least you can give me a conscious, ability to make a conscious choice
mm-hmm.
as to whether I want to partake.
Mm-hmm.
But dragging each other into these things or cutting each other off and then one of us going off and sneaking to do it, that is not going to create healthy relationships.
No.
Once again, the film industry, including pornography, has become this, it's rated X. Do not enter. Do not go there.
Yeah.
Hide it.
Yeah.
I'm not saying bring it out to everybody. I'm saying it's a conflict that needs healed somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some things in this world that cannot be reconciled. There are some depths of pain and illusion that you simply cannot reconcile the way human beings would like them reconciled. You're not going to have people handshaking saying, okay, well, we'll agree that porn's allowed to now be in part of the mainstream cinema and it's allowed to be on television. Let's just make it after midnight. I hope that it doesn't ever come to such a shallow level of compromise.
Right.
There is some unhealthy pieces to it, and yet, ironically, here I'm saying, I really don't have judgments about porn. I think it could be done, that is to say, full graphic pornography could be done tastefully.
Here's what I'm saying too, Michael. Now, thank you for bringing that up.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that if I were president of the United States, I've always said I would ban pornography because pornography keeps people from communicating.
Right.
And, it's an instant gratification. It's something to get you aroused when conversation should be getting you aroused with your mate. And it's not about, the spiritual concept of it is about expressing your God essence. And as kooky as that might sound to whoever's listening that may want to criticize what I'm saying, that's fine. You have total, absolute right to your opinion. And I honor and respect your opinion, even if I don't agree with it. And I would hope you do the same right back. And if you don't, that's okay too. But the thing is that if it's a spiritual connection, or let's just call it conscious and take spirituality out of it.
Right.
Let's say conscious relating, conscious lovemaking, conscious communication, conscious conflict resolution. And if people would truly, really focus on inner conflict resolution, it would be in every part of their life the second that they got complete with that.
That's right.
And it would show up in their lovemaking. It would show up in the cinema. It would show up in the TV. It would show up in conversations and religious wars and wars in general and politics and everywhere. And the reason we have outer conflict is because of our inner conflict, this angst that we're feeling, that we're not addressing, that we're pushing down, that we're numbing out, that we're using pornography to numb out, that they're doing pornography to numb out. Pornography, as you and I discussed before, is a misguided attempt at people to heal who have been molested. And it was funny that you said to me, funny and tragic, dark comedy sort of way, is that if you had a film producer who does porn, tell every person who comes to audition for his movie, have you been molested? And if they say yes, which would be about 70% of the people, they say yes, then that producer says, well, you go get therapy and then come back and audition.
Right. When you
I'll let you audition then. He would go out of
business. Consciously come back. That's right.
So that's a brilliant insight. And, you know, and I really feel that if we made a movie about a story like that, where even the story you told me about the porn star who went to school and became a doctor so she could take care of the other porn stars.
Well, that's a true story.
That was a nice movie.
I can't remember her name, but that particular woman, what a wonderful spirit. I mean, that you got to understand what is the concept of soul's purpose. You know, it's when your soul's purpose means when you take a divinely guided mission, blend it with your previous experience and your own talents and likes, that's all blended is called one's soul's purpose. That woman, porn or no porn, sorry that she was a former porn star, who cares?
Mm-hmm.
Bottom line is she took her experience along and aligned it with a divine mission, which is she started saying, let's be more health conscious. Forget about spiritual right now. That's not going to happen with her.
Mm-hmm.
She says health conscious. So she brought healthiness to that world because she was part of that world. So she's actually doing checkups on these folks, and she's the one that exposed the AIDS outbreak in that community. She shut down the whole industry, as I understand it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
She shut down the whole porn industry, at least in the U.S., made them stop filming until they could all get tested and start the whole process over again as to who is healthy to be in the industry and who isn't. What an amazing thing. This is just a woman who was a porn star. Who would have thought that she could find a mission like that and actually serve God, I guess you could say.
She did. And what she did was she took, see, like you said before, and what we were talking about is people have a misguided need to heal, and they go to pornography as a way to heal themselves who have been molested and who have been abused, and they're trying to heal themselves through finding a way to make what happened to them at least be able to make a living at it.
Well, what we do, unfortunately, you know, the criminal always returns to the scene of the crime, as it said. You know, there's something about us in our psyche that brings us back to the scene of a crime or slow down on the freeway when there's an accident. There's something about us that does this, and so when you've been sexually abused, your body will sometimes completely shut down, go numb, and you're just simply thinking you just happen to not be a sexual person, which you're mistaken. You're wounded and your body's numb and can heal. There is actual sex therapy that ranges from conversation type to hands-on, no pun intended, type to surrogate type, and even to more like tantric sexual experiences or workshops. You know, you have things of that nature, right?
Right.
So, you know, it varies so much. But there is an answer. There is hope. These folks can actually find some form of healing.
But
that's for those who might be a little numb or whatever. But then there's folks that think, oh, no, there's nothing wrong. I just happen to be a sexual person.
That's what I was saying.
And some of them go into the film industry, or some of them just become very, acting out in their life and doing whatever they're going to do, you know, being a bit promiscuous and think that that's just, you know, part of what they're doing. And it isn't. Their pain is acting out. And so what I'm saying, I guess long story short or long way around, is that they're acting out sexually because unconsciously they're believing that if I can recreate the sexual experience that once wounded me, except this time I'm in control, I will actually be healing it.
You know
unconscious. And there's conscious. Unconscious means, you know, even when you don't know you're doing it, unconsciously you're recreating the event.
Yeah.
You're once again having sex, unconsciously thinking that you're going to be able to fix it this time. So I remember some strippers that I've worked with before, they all came to that same conclusion. They realized men abused me, and now I stand on a stage above them in a place of power. They pay me. I get paid, I smile, I play a game with them, I twist their hearts, and I walk off that stage, and I don't care about them. This is a little more conscious, and I don't mean spiritually conscious, meaning they know what they're doing.
Right.
It isn't unconscious behavior, it's conscious, but it's completely twisted. You're not healing just because you have put yourself in a pseudo-power role and are being paid for it or whatever. So, again, it's not conscious. So.
Yeah.
You go further and further to the point where the healing lies is, number one, where you know what's going on. You know you're acting out. You have the self-awareness. That's a very big key right there.
Mm-hmm.
You know what you're doing. Then you go into, you know, of course, the why you're doing it. But with healing and therapy and or sex therapy or whatever, you start bringing yourself to a place of not only do I want to extract and heal the old messages and wounds and whatnot that once controlled me,
mm-hmm.
I am going to choose to replace them. All healing has to be emptying a cup and refilling a cup.
Absolutely.
So you not only bring up, and some people say, well, you know what, I don't even want to remember painful memories of any kind of abuse, let alone sexual abuse.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to remember, but you have to be willing to remember, because if it is part of your path and or makeup to where memories are supposed to be seen consciously, you have to have the courage to do that. If you don't, it already confirms to the universe that this thing has power over you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that everybody always has to remember everything, but you have to have the courage to do so if that's what's meant to be.
Yeah,
and with a healer or support group, that can happen.
Absolutely. And as you were saying, you have to first empty the cup before you can fill the cup. My business partner and I do quantum hypnotherapy, where we uninstall the old software and reinstall the newly designed software that does work for the person in a two-hour hypnosis session.
That's right.
And it's amazingly effective, and it's just like a healing on steroids. It's a two-hour, once-in-a-lifetime thing they ever have to do, and it's high-quality hypnosis with high-energy life coaching, and it's all intuitive, and whatever's going on with that person, my spirit knows it and reveals it, and we redesign it and leave them with only the wisdom from that event rather than the pain. And in your book, Michael, do you have a chapter in there about this kind of healing and what a person, anyone listening, if they got your book, let's say tonight or tomorrow, and they're in dire straits and they really, really want to overcome this pain that they're in, and they suddenly had an aha moment while they're listening to the show and really want to do something conscious for themselves to heal and get past that and unnumb their body and unnumb their minds, what is there something in your book, Sacred Sexuality, that you can lead them to, page number, chapter title, something?
Yeah, I'll answer that in two ways. One, the subject of sex therapy is addressed in the first section or to the second section of the book. What is sex therapy? And like I said, and you got to be careful, because there's lots of people out there, even that teach sacred sexuality, that will no problem welcome in somebody that's had trauma and abuse and just welcome right into some, you know, tantric weekend in Maui, you know, and they ignore your previous abuses and they don't even address it, which could really either bury the stuff deeper,
mm-hmm.
or blast it out in an unhealthy way.
Right.
So when I say that they're sex therapy and sex therapists, we really have to be careful. But here's the way it goes. There's not really licensing per se for hands-on kind of surrogate work. And it can even go into the realm of what's, you know, termed illegal.
Mm-hmm.
So in a sense, when a person wants to do such work, it's talked about early in the book, sex therapy or sexual healing. First stage is more like seeing a counselor, just to even get some self-inventory on where you've been, what's happened to you, and do some real good groundwork on, you know, getting a grip on what's going on with your abuses, if you have any,
mm-hmm.
So that it doesn't come back, you know, and blow up in you if you go too far, you know, in learning sexuality, because the hands-on can trigger. You have cellular memory.
Yes.
So it's better to have some groundwork with counseling. If you've done that, you know, you move to a second stage, which I call more like hands-on sexual healing,
mm-hmm.
which can include forms of massage or body work. But yet, you know, sometimes just simple, much simpler versions, but it can actually include sexual contact work, meaning objective healer working on anatomy. A lot of surrogates do things like this. A man has erectile problems, surrogate might work with him and literally help him reprogram his reactions to being touched genitally, and lo and behold, it heals. I mean, what a beautiful thing. We don't like to think in terms of, you know, genitals when we come to think about healing and sexuality, or healing and spirituality, but man, it's a big part of it. It should be a part of it. It should be the
yeah.
same as any other issue, rather than being taboo.
Yeah.
You know, people don't want to talk. If you're a healer, people don't want to hear you say, I'm a healer and I do sex therapy and work on genitals, or colon therapy. You know, those are just not popular
yeah.
you know, topics.
Right.
But they're both issues that are important to address and work on, and they have to do with your healthiness.
Well, it's repression that causes, you know, all of the sex crime.
That's right. That's right.
And
that's what I was saying earlier.
It's very unhealthy.
So the sex therapy, as in terms of how to, where to, and so forth. And the third stage, incidentally, is more like where you're sharing, like a tantric experience, or sharing with somebody and learning sexual experience as a mutual partner, mm-hmm. rather than being worked on. And I think that that has to be worked up, too, for most, not all, but for most people,
mm-hmm.
if they've had traumas. If they haven't had traumas and abuses and large guilt and shames from family mm-hmm. and whatnot, then, yeah, sure, absolutely.
Oh, guilt and shame, don't even get me started. There's so much of that around, you know, sexuality, and then you've got the organized religion, and not to put down any church or any religious beliefs. But, wow, you know, to deny your own body is what many of them expected you to do. I mean, I myself, I don't mind saying, was celibate for 2 years, and boy, was that freaky. You know, it was very unnatural, and I'm glad I did it, though, because it was a purification process that I'm happy I went through, and I didn't have to do it, but I chose to do it, and I committed myself to it, and I'm very pleased that I did do it, but I will quite frankly say I won't do that again.
Right.
Because it was unnatural,
right.
And I don't need to do that again. And, you know, life is to be lived, and joyous abundance is what we're here for, and we've gotten off the path of that by hook or by crook, or by misleading poor unconscious people who are separated from their own divinity and their own unified field of love, have lost their way. They're giving messages to their children, don't touch that, don't do that, oh, you're bad. You know, and then you feel guilty and shame for even, you know, exploring your own body, and that's just wrong.
That's right.
That causes so much misunderstanding and confusion that, you know, I'd like to see cinema and TV unravel that mess with the writers out there. Please put your thinking caps on. Call Michael Murdad, you know, team up with somebody and write some things that are beautiful, that can have the steamy sex scenes, but done in a beautiful, beautiful way that's healing for
Absolutely.
People.
Absolutely. That's
you
right.
Know?
And there's a really, what a bold movie. It's called Bliss.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, this was an incredible movie, and I recommend it to all clients and students that get involved with sexual healing. Because there's a character in there that's like a sex therapist,
mm-hmm.
and he walks this couple through their sexual healing process, and in integrity and all that, you know,
mm-hmm.
he's completely on the level. And what they discover as he's teaching the husband how to do work on the wife, you know, is that here comes some sexual abuses surface.
Mm-hmm.
Very intense, powerful movie in that regard. If somebody's really, really wounded sexually. And hasn't done much work on it, I wouldn't recommend that they go to that place yet, because it could, you know, evoke a little too much.
Well, it would help them to see that film,
but,
though.
But in the place of cinema, there are things out there, you know, and that's one movie that I think is absolutely outstanding. And,
uh-huh.
You know, and you were asking, and like I said, I was saying, even in the book, in later chapters, there are techniques on sexual healing,
mm-hmm.
on how to touch the sacred spot, as we call the G-spot in the woman, is called the sacred spot in sacred sexuality. That sacred spot actually seems to be the most primary place a woman holds her wounds, sexual wounds, whether it's
rape, and that's why she's numb.
Inhibitions or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So there's techniques on working this spot and massaging it, not just rubbing it for different levels of orgasm, like these magazines kind of start throwing out to people as soon as they realize it sells a copy of the magazine.
Uh-huh.
But for healing purposes.
Mm-hmm.
So there's something that could go in a magazine, is how to heal these sacred spots rather than how to stimulate them, because the healing will bring levels of orgasm that's beyond human imagination.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes full-body experiential, you know. So
mm-hmm.
there's in the book, there are techniques on intercourse forms of healing as well as touch forms of healing. But there are, you know, there are also movies out there. And I just think that it would be fantastic if somebody would, if you could imagine a faction or something of the pornography industry,
mm-hmm.
that said, you know, we're going to make, if you can use these words in the same sentence, conscious porn, you know.
porn.
And here's what I mean by that.
Yeah.
It's porn in the sense that it's full body exposure, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But conscious in the sense that it involves healing, or that it involves a deeper sense of connectedness. And I don't mean it has to be all new agey, just...
No, sensitivity.
Just deeper sensitivity to the whole... You know, and the thing is, to the whole experience, to the whole thing, the whole consciousness. But the thing is, there are couples out there that it's simply black or white.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's naughty. We're not going to watch that sort of thing. And they stay in this place of repression and judgment.
Mm-hmm.
But yet part of them wants to come out and learn a little more.
Absolutely.
So maybe
that's
if
nature.
We brought them to a, you know, if they we brought them to a place where there were films made that was a bridge, you know, that it was explicit, but it was done with conscientiousness. Just imagine what it could do for that couple or that person.
Now, I would actually promote something like that because I think that it's healing. Anything that's moving consciousness forward and healing the heart, healing the soul, healing the planet, I'm all for it. And my life's purpose, my life's work is conflict resolution, period.
Right.
And that's inner conflict resolution, and that's where it starts. That's why quantum hypnotherapy is so important to me, and life coaching and career coaching and talent management even. I mean, that's my opportunity to mentor my clients and help them to get reunited with their divinity and their true nature so that they can express their gifts without guilt and without shame and without any kind of encumbrance or numbness and just live happily and joyously as their true nature. And it is possible, and I see it happening in this lifetime. And there are a lot of people our age, Michael, who are, you know, there's a gathering taking place and a momentum that cannot be stopped. And I am so thrilled about it.
Well, the bottom line is for us to have a whole spiritual experience while on Earth. They call it heaven on Earth, if you will, but
yeah,
to have it
your mind.
It means not having judgment.
Yeah.
So that means you're not. Well, first of all, a complete experience of spirit, spirituality, a complete true spiritual experience means union with God, union with yourself, and that means all aspects of yourself,
mm-hmm.
and union with others. The
mm-hmm.
Sufis say that's the greatest attainment is a healthy relationship with God, self, and others, and in that order, by the way. So, this is the ultimate we're looking for, and you cannot exclude any part of yourself. So, in the tantric tradition, tantra is about, the term means expand, to weave together and expand your consciousness. So, but it does mean to weave together. So
mm-hmm.
that means all parts of yourself honored, loved, and conscious, and
mm-hmm.
all parts of yourself brought together without judgment. So you awaken the senses, you awaken your beingness, every cell coming to life. That's why they talk so much about whole body orgasms. It's not because you rubbed something fast enough or mechanically enough, but instead there was enough consciousness to each movement, to each choice, to
Absolutely.
Each sensation that everything had to come alive. It was like it's inevitable.
Yeah,
enough consciousness. Capital C,
yeah.
to anything, you're going to have new life. You're going to have experience. So
Absolutely.
This is actually what sexual therapy or healing is about, is if you bring love, safety, responsibility, communication to a connection, a physical connection with somebody, they will be able to surrender, to trust and surrender, which means heal.
Yes, and so, when you get to the point of playfulness, you have a ribbon.
Yeah, that's the whole piece. That's the, that's the whole... the whole gamut from beginning till end. You bring that conscientiousness to the situation, the scenario. And this is, I don't care if it's meditation, Zen in the art of athletics, or sexuality, all of them are meant to be holy experiences.
Yeah.
Whether you call that holy with a W, the whole U, or H, holy, it's all to be
yeah.
holy experience.
I'm with you. And we're coming up on the end of the hour, and Michael, I got to tell you, this is the fastest show that I've done. I don't know where the time went, but in our first conversation, we could have talked. I think we did talk for over an hour, and it didn't seem like more than 10 minutes. But thank you so very, very much for your contribution to our show tonight, and bringing your insights and your spirit and your warmth and your humor to Spiritual Hollywood this evening. And I just really, really enjoyed it. And I'd love to hear from the listeners and tell me what you thought of this show tonight. And please pick up Michael's book if it appeals to you and it spoke to you, Sacred Sexuality. And you could get it, I'm guessing, at Amazon.com. Is that right, Michael?
That's correct.
Okay. And go to Michael's website, see what he's doing. He's in Los Angeles right now. If you want to book an appointment with him, he's doing private sessions, and you're doing workshops as well?
That's correct. Lectures and workshops.
Hey, everybody. That's my time. Sorry to go over like that. Next week, we have Dr. Lynn and Ho'oponopono. Please join us then. And thank you for joining us this evening. Have a great night and a great week. Bye-bye.